Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast brought to you by Wandering One Studios and your host, me, Link Flores. How are y'all doing today? It is a very balmy, humid, and gross. Wednesday, June 9th, 2025. Gosh, the weather's gross outside. But, you know, climate change isn't real, right? There's no human impact on the environment. It's just, sure. It's just the heat from hell coming back up now that all the world is going crazy. Anyway, thank you all so very much for listening. Thank you. I've seen, like, a slight downturn in the podcast numbers, which is a little concerning, but also things are getting real tight around here. We're going to get into it, but please, 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 whenever you get a chance, rate and review the podcast, share it with a friend. If you like the episode, like it. If you don't, mark that you don't like it. All it does is just kind of show a little bit of engagement, show that people actually are paying attention to it. And just by pushing a couple little buttons, just taking an extra 10 seconds out of your day is more than enough to help raise the podcast up a little bit in the rankings and the ratings. So thank you very much for anybody who dares to do that and cares to do that. I appreciate you. Thank you to all the Patreon supporters. You guys are awesome. I'm still in talks with how and when I'm going to get some guests on the podcast for some Patreon exclusive episodes. Some things I want to get into the podcast. Some different takes I want to take. You know, maybe it's not like a completely, I don't know how to put it, something like some topics and some conversations that wouldn't really necessarily have a solid home on the core podcast, but that I could delve into a little bit more deeply in the Patreon episodes. So if you have comments, questions, whatever, maybe suggestions for a Patreon episode or Patreon content that you might like to see, hit me up at patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. And you can also check me out over on Twitch, where I'll be playing video games and stuff and whatnot. Just kind of picking my way through Genshin Impact because it's so much fun. It's very addictive, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But there's lots of other cool stuff that's coming down the pipe, too, that I'm really excited for. All right, and without further ado, let's get into it. The week has been pretty good. A little bananas, you know what I mean? It's just like the same old week. How about you guys? You ever find that like you're excited or anticipating something, and then you get to the time when the thing's supposed to happen, and you're like, why did I make these plans? I get that way sometimes. And I like this week hasn't really been that much of a thing. It's because like the stuff that I'm looking forward to, I'm really looking forward to. I'm very excited for the stuff that I'm going to be doing, but it's also like, it's one of those things where like when you schedule something that you got to get done, right? Like maybe it's a dentist appointment. Maybe it's I just got to go and do grocery shopping, right? Maybe it's, I should probably get the car vacuumed and washed. I haven't done that in a while. And I'll be like, I plan to do it on this day. And then that day comes and you're like, shit, I would rather do anything else than what I'm supposed to be doing right now. You know, maybe you're just having a good day and you're like, man, this is such a fun day. I don't want to interrupt it with other stuff and I shouldn't have planned it for this day, but I'm stuck now. Maybe you're just having like a blah kind of day. You know, you just want to like, I would love to just sit around, you know what I mean? Loosen the sweatpants up a notch or two and just watch TV and eat snacks and just become a great big old hog. Or maybe you're having a really bad day and you're like, dude, don't talk to me. Don't blink at me. Fuck, I gotta go to the dealership to get the oil changed. You know? I've had that happen before. And like, this week though is different though. It's like, I've got a lot of stuff that I'm really excited for. For example, today, ordinarily, like I said, me and my homie go do like a movie night, try to do it like once a week. Doesn't always happen because life and whatnot. But today, actually last night we were talking about it. And because it's been a while since we did a movie night, we're like, you know what? Let's go to the movies. And there's like a deal, I guess, on tickets today. And he was like, dude, let's just get tickets and let's go see 28 Years Later. Now, Those of you who know me well know that I'm not a big fan of horror movies in general, right? I do kind of love a creature film, though. So that kind of stuff actually makes me like kind of go like, ooh, I'm interested. And I watched 28 Days and 28 Weeks Later way back when they first came out. And I loved those films. 28 Weeks Later, not as good as 28 Days. But, you know, it's also one of those things where I think like that film was made for a certain, not only fans of a certain genre, but fans of maybe that particular franchise, right? And I think that there were some efforts that were made to make it more accessible to other people in 28 Weeks Later, and I don't know that it all paid off. It wasn't horrible, it just wasn't as impactful as 28 Days Later. But nonetheless, I'm very excited to see 28 Years Later, because when I saw the trailer, my first thought was, oh man, I remember watching these movies, and while like I wouldn't necessarily say they were fun, you know what I mean? I enjoyed them. I enjoyed the first one, actually was phenomenal, in my personal opinion. Probably one of the best horror slash action slash adventure movies I've ever seen. And I was really excited to go back and revisit this universe. So my buddy mentioned it last night. I'm like, yo, we got to go check this out. And so he's like, yeah, bet, let's go. So we're going to go do that this afternoon. And I had halfway forgotten, only because we didn't actually secure the tickets, because I think he was just waiting to see like what showtimes were available. And I was like, oh shit. And then when he mentioned it this morning, I'm like, oh shit, that's right, we got to do that, huh? We got to get them tickets. Oh, word? Oh shit, I just got a message. Hold on 1 second. All right, I'm back. Yeah, I just got a message from him just now. Like I said, we're just like, we didn't hash out the tickets yet. I'm like, shit. He just texted me and he's like, hey, man. I was like, hey, we're going to go at 5. I'm like, cool. He's like, yeah, let me know what I owe you, bro, so I can pay you back. And he's like, dude, you paid for us to go to the movies last time, so I got you. I'm like, oh, shit, I did? I forgot. Yeah, when I said we went to go watch Sinners in the theater, that was the last one we went to. And I was like, I'm buying for this one because I'm so excited. I want to go see it. You know what I mean? I'll buy you out for this one. He's like, all right. So I was like, all right, cool, bet. So I get to go and see 28 Years Later today. So I'm really stoked for that. We were actually talking about a lot of movies and stuff like that last night. And like, one of the things I've been noticing, and I'm going to go ahead and tag this right now. I need to keep a notepad open, at least a notepad app open. I don't know. I find that I remember shit better when I write it down as opposed to when I just type it into something. Like some people like, send yourself a text message. Bro, I forget a text message all day long. But if I write something down, there's something about that physical, visceral connection to a physical medium that makes it kind of sit in your brain a little bit longer. But anyway, I'm just going to go ahead and put this as a marker in the podcast, in the podcast notes, that there are going to be some maybe minor spoilers ahead for some Marvel shows, including Ironheart, possibly Daredevil if you hadn't seen some of that, and maybe one or two of the Marvel movies. There's some minor spoilers ahead just for Marvel shit in general. So that's going to go into the notes right here. I'm going to pause it just for a second. But last night we were talking about just like various movies and things that are coming out, things we're interested in, things we're excited for. And I was interested in watching Ironheart, the Disney Plus series. Basically, the revolves around this character named Riri Williams, who's a very brilliant mechanical and engineer, and essentially like a protege to Tony Stark. Like, I think in the comic books, she actually had opportunity to work alongside Tony Stark to a certain degree. But I think, like, in the cinematic universe, since they killed off Tony Stark, ooh, spoilers for a movie that's, like, almost a decade old. She was inspired by Tony's work and wanted to see if she could do it better. And there's some interesting moments in the show that I feel like kind of played out fairly well as far as, like, you know, the portrayal of her ambition, her goals, and, like, the kind of, like, kind of flying by the seat of your pants, or even, like, a little bit of a almost inordinate risk taker. Like, this, some of the stuff she was doing was kind of like, why are you doing that, sis? Like, that's probably not the move. But the kind of mindset it takes to be a pioneer and to blaze trails and to go out and try to change an industry or do something that's completely revolutionary and never been done before, some of that was really well put together, at least in the first three episodes of Ironheart. Now, I have to be quite honest, I haven't seen the last three. That's because I was watching them with my wife and I'm like, no, wait on watching them without her so we could watch it together. Because our initial impressions were, while Ironheart is a fun and interesting look at a character that you may not have otherwise been familiar with, it feels like it's kind of, and this is less, I think, a problem of the character and more a problem of streaming services, which is a point I made last night. Streaming services have made it so that people feel like they have to rush a project to get it done. Otherwise, the streaming service in particular, no matter who it is, Netflix, HBO Max, you know, Disney Plus, whatever, might cancel it before it actually has a chance to get to its full, you know, to its full fruition. And I think that that's one of the problems that you have when you have a show or a series or whatever built around a streaming, built on a streaming platform is depending on how popular the show is or is not, you may or may not get a chance to finish telling your story. I think maybe that's also part of the negotiation process too, is like if you're going to be making a show for a streaming service, you have to put it in your contract like, hey, no matter what happens, you can't cancel this shit before I get to this point, you know? And making a push for that in negotiations might help make these shows a little bit better and stronger. But one of the things we were talking about last night was one of the quote-unquote nephews, Christian, was like, yeah, are you excited to see the new Superman film? And I actually really am, because one, I'm a big fan of James Gunn as a director. I love the fact that he can make such a... a flagship film, right? Out of just about anything. I mean, look what he did with the Suicide Squad, right? The original Suicide Squad film, pretty mediocre, if we're being quite honest. But then you come out with James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, and it's fantastic. It's irreverent as hell. It's dark. It's funny. It's got emotion. There's a little bit of something literally for everybody. And it doesn't really stray at all from the character's roots and the way that the franchise is being presented. Same thing with the Guardians of the Galaxy films. I mean, you can see the through line of it is high budget, high intensity action, but then also like real emotional gravitas, you know, from the characters themselves, from the actors. Lighthearted fun moments that will make you laugh in the middle of your tears. And then like real kick in the gut moments that make you stop and really think about what's happening. So I feel like when it comes to a character like Superman, there's a lot of room to play around with that emotionality, with the action, with the concept of Superman as a character, right? Like the idea of truth, justice, and the American way. Superman being like, generally speaking, obviously one of the most highly revered characters in all of comic bookdom, but also like a real iconic example of the higher ideals of America, and also, more to the point, humanity as a whole. And while to my recollection, I've never seen the the lead actor for Superman, whose name actually eludes me right now. good Lord. It's David Corenswet. Interesting. I don't know that. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything that I can recall. But it looks like he's bringing a very grounded kind of version of Clark Kent and also Superman to the stage. To the screen. It just feels like he's got like the, what is the right word that I'm looking for? I'm looking for the correct phrase to say what I'm trying to say. It feels like he's got like an intentionality. That's what I'm looking for. Like an intentionality of focus when it comes to playing both Clark Kent and Superman as separate entities, but also being able to combine them together and make you feel like and feel like you care about both of them and then understand that they're the same person, right? So I'm curious because like just from what I've seen, it feels like he could pull that off. And then James Gunn is really good about pulling that out of an actor just as a director. And he does seem to care a lot about just whatever he's working on. He's just a fan of that thing. And I think when you have somebody who has that kind of passion and zeal for a project, whether it's a character, a property, a franchise, a super team, whatever it is, like that kind of shines through and it bleeds over from the director's enthusiasm and love and consideration for the property, and it bleeds over to the actor. I've worked with directors before just as a stage actor who seemed to kind of phone it in when it came to giving direction or, you know, guiding an actor through the process, and it would show on the stage. And I've even on screen, I've done some small, you know, independent projects that never really went anywhere, but you could feel that there was like a different vibe when your director didn't give a damn. But when your director's fully, thoroughly invested in it and they actually do care about the project and about the way the story is delivered and the performances they're trying to get out of their actors, it comes across. And one of the questions that I had was, do you think that this film, the new Superman film, will be as good or better than The Dark Knight? And my contention is, you can't compare the two, in my personal opinion. That's like comparing apples and oranges. They're two completely separate types of fruits. Now, if you ask me which two types of citrus fruits I liked, you know what I mean? Apple, whether it's oranges, grapefruits, lemons, limes, tangelos, tangerines, I could probably put that to the test, you know? They're kind of like in a similar vein. But Batman and Superman are two very vastly different characters. And so the universes in which they live, in which their stories are told, are going to be very different. And the directorial styles of, why am I blanking on his name? Well, not James Gunn, but Christopher Nolan, for those Batman films with Christian Bale, there's a very different look and feel to that world. It's supposed to be. Gotham is a very different feel from Metropolis. So I don't know that you could measure those two against one another, right? Like you could measure the Superman films against one another. Could this be better than Man of Steel? Who knows? Could it be better than Superman Returns with Brendan Routh? Maybe, hopefully. And it wasn't even to say that that was necessarily a bad film. I just think it was probably not the best characterization of Superman. But it was very, it was an interesting conversation. And one of the things we also brought up was, do you think that this Superman that we're getting right now, the James Gunn's version of Superman, can match up with The Batman, like the most recent film that came out with Robert Pattinson? Do you think those universes are going to kind of commingle? And to that point, I hope so. I think it will. I think that they'll find some way to weave them together. And obviously, like, I'm not one of those fortunate few who gets like preview movie tickets. Although if there's somebody out there who's down to let me review a movie early, I am definitely down for it. But I think that they're going to try to find a way to weave those universes together, because the biggest problem that DC has had as a, not just as a comic book universe, which they've had many of these, if you go and look back over DC's history, just over the last 15, 20 years of comic books, they had a very tumultuous time of trying to build a contiguous universe that all the characters kind of run through the same through line. They're in the same universe and all functions together on a similar plane, right? Whereas Marvel, particularly in their cinematic universe, at least up until about 6 years ago, was able to draw together all these different characters, weave them around one another, and through like not only the movies, but also through the television series, to come to one final climactic moment when you get through the Avengers Endgame. So that was one of the things that like I was always impressed with by Marvel, at least in their first wave, was that they worked really hard to try to cultivate a world-building narrative, right? Everybody that was in the world had a part to play in the world. So when you get to the end and you see the giant battle when everybody comes flying in through the portals, you know, and Wong is there, you wanted more? You know, you're like, okay, shit, like that's all the people. You see Black Panther, you see the Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, you've got Bucky and Sam, you know, you've got, you know, like Falcon Winter Soldier, right? You've got Captain Marvel, you've got Thor, everybody's all coming together. Like you felt like that was the culmination of all this work to craft this universe where everybody had some kind of interconnectivity with one another. I mean, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Ant-Man, you know, you had all Scarlet Witch, you had all these wonderful characters come together. DC has failed to really do that with the comic book universes and with their cinematic universes. And I think that's why their live action properties have hit like some middling marks. Now, there are some breakout successes to be sure, but I think that that's one of the biggest issues they have is they haven't really built a cohesive world where these characters who don't normally necessarily play well together, even in the Justice League, but at least they have to have some kind of interaction with one another for that Justice League film to exist, right? They haven't really cultivated that. And I think that that's why they keep kind of quote unquote losing to Marvel. And why I think like this might be the moment where they start to turn it around. I'm really hoping against hope that at some point throughout James Gunn's Superman film, we get to see Robert Pattinson in the suit as the Dark Knight, or even as Bruce Wayne, as like a cameo, just kind of like to show we're going to try to build these universes to work together and to, you know, craft something that becomes larger than each one of these individual films and franchises itself. So yeah, interesting conversations that were had the other night. I had a blast talking about it. I can talk about film for days. No joke. I sincerely can. But yeah, that was, like I said, there might be a couple spoilers in there, but hopefully not too many to turn people off to listening to it. All right. So yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, that was a lot of comic book movie stuff. Comic book, TV show stuff. But that's the kind of stuff I always liked. And I've been thinking about some artwork and stuff that I want to get back into doing. And I just had like a real stagnant period for a while, you know? Like, one of the things that's been bringing me back into it has actually been playing Marvel Rivals on Xbox. And it's largely because the cosmetic stuff, like at one point when I was on Instagram still, I was following one of the artists who is a conceptual design artist for the game. And I would see some of these designs that he was coming out with, not for the game, but just in his own time. And I'm like, oh my God, this game is going to look fantastic. Like, even if it plays like crap, it's going to look gorgeous. The fun thing about it is it happens to also be a really solid game. But the thing that kills me about Marvel Rivals, just like any other game, is the freaking cosmetics, man. Like, you've all heard me talk ad nauseum about like how a cosmetic store, when it's built on the idea of bagging giant whales, can sometimes make a game feel too cash grabby, even if it's not a pay to win kind of thing. But Marvel Rivals, to a large extent, offers enough options for you to be able to get the things that you want with in-game currency, provided you invest the time in playing, right? Unlike a game like Destiny 2, which I used to be I'm never a huge fan of Destiny 2, but I was a big fan of the franchise of Destiny as a whole. But Destiny 2 has been doing things wrong from the start, and they're getting worse and more egregiously so. But that's because, you know, the people who throw the big money down for the big ticket items are incentivizing them to continue to act poorly towards the player base as a whole. So I blame Destiny as like the development team and as a company, Bungie, for making these kinds of decisions that are predatory of people who are willing to throw that kind of money down. And I blame the people who throw the money down, because it's not just a singular point of blame right here. There's multiple points where along the line where accountability has to come into play, right? Bungie has given up on Destiny 2. Let's just be quite honest about it. They don't care. They're phoning it in at this point, if that. They put all their eggs into the marathon basket, and then they drop that thing all the way down the fucking hill. So now they're trying to backpedal to Destiny 2 and be like, wait, we have more stuff. And I think Destiny 2 players are just kind of over it. Now, Marvel has the very fortunate, I guess is the way to put it, the very fortunate position of being based around very beloved comic book characters from across the world. Like, they're worldwide, it's widely known, beloved, and all that jazz, right? So whereas Destiny is probably not as familiar to people outside of the United States, North America, Marvel has a wide-ranging appeal. So they're able to kind of maybe even go, hey, well, we could charge you, you know, $15 for this game skin or whatever, this cosmetic look, Or, you know, you could just play for like 15 hours and earn enough coins to get it for free 99. I'll take the free 99 option. If I'm having a great time in the game, I don't mind coming back to the well and playing again for hours and hours on end. I know many people who do. And some people who've made Marvel Rivals like their bread and butter. Like, that's their game now. Now, it's not necessarily my thing. I wouldn't like to just shoehorn myself into one basket and be like, this is all I do. Like, even as much as I played Destiny 2 with my friends, and even as much as I play Genshin Impact now, I don't want to necessarily be that one-trick pony. And that's not to say that that's a bad thing and that doesn't work out for some other creators. It just doesn't feel right for me. And not everything that works for everybody else is going to work for you. I think that's a thing that I learned very early on. Is that no matter how good you are at X, Y, or Z thing, if it doesn't entertain people, they're not going to watch. And if it doesn't move you, you're not going to want to do it. And I think that that's one of the interesting things about streaming or content creation as you, I guess as a whole, whatever, fuck. Whether it's podcasting, video, you know, video blogs or whatever, like video blogs. What am I, 80? Vlogs. Let's plays, live streams, you know, whatever. It's one thing to cater to a certain market or a certain demographic. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But the real thing you have to remember is at the end of the day, if you're not enjoying yourself, you're going to hate what you're doing. Even if it brings you money, if it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't fill your soul as much as it fills your wallet, it's not going to be worth it. And there are some things that fill my soul that don't necessarily fill my wallet. Like practically everything that I do, to be honest. Like, I make not a nickel off of podcasting. I make very few nickels out of streaming. But are things that I love to do, and I'm trying to find ways to get better at it and to turn it into something that's more prolific and also profitable, because I would love to continue to do this thing. But it just, you know, sometimes, some days you got to look at it and go like, fuck, no matter how much I love this thing, it's not bringing me revenue, which is like one part of it, right? I think I would give up sooner if it didn't bring me joy. Like, I actually do love what I'm doing. And so while the money's not necessarily there, I do believe that that would come eventually, you know? And maybe that's naivete, maybe that's foolhardy thinking on my part. I don't know. Maybe it's the optimist prime in me, just kind of always hoping that there's going to be that next little thing around the corner that's going to kick it off for me and it's going to work out. And that's a largely, I mean, I guess you could say it's a largely naive or foolish idea, but it's a romantic idea that, you know, if I continue to pour my heart and soul into the things that I love to do, then that will pay off. And that will not just be like necessarily just financially satisfying, but emotionally and spiritually satisfying as well. I mean, that's just the way I see it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm out of my mind about this. Let me know what you think with a comment or something like that. That'd be great. What is that? I can't read my own writing right now. I think I wrote this when I didn't have my glasses on. I think I know where that was going now. I made some notes so I could kind of keep track of things that I wanted to say. And then I brain farted. Okay, there we go. I got it. It worked out. After talking about, like, you know, the idea behind streaming and whether or not it's going to be this or whether or not it's going to be that, I have to say, like, I've been looking for a new job just for in general, and it sucks. Let's be quite honest with you guys. It fucking sucks to try to find a job. Here's the other issue that I have. I am 40, almost 47 years old right now. I don't have a college degree to show to anybody. And even though I have plenty of work experience in a variety of fields, the biggest issue that I have is that I'm almost 47. And so now I either have to find some way to break into an industry that's going to be pretty ironclad with their fan favorites, or, you know, maybe jam-packed with a bunch of new, young, fresh talent, right? Or, you know, and I don't have a problem with this, taking like some bargain basement-ass job where you're not going to get paid nearly what you're worth, but at least you'll make a check somewhere. And so I've been applying to a bunch of those kinds of jobs. Just, you know, I don't give a shit what it is. You want me to work the stock, work the register? You want me to sweep the bathrooms? I don't give a shit. I just want to make check dollars so I don't have to be broke all the time and we're not having to fucking struggle. Even if it's not a lot. But it's fucking tough, man. Like, I've been saying it for years, and it was tough back when I had a job, you know, just to even maintain the job. But I think now one of the biggest issues I've noticed is not just consumer confidence in the people that are looking for jobs in the market, but also employer confidence as well. Like, I think a lot of employers would think like, yo, you're just only going to be here for, you know, a couple months and then you're going to leave once the season's over or whatever. Or they're like, I don't want to hire you because you're going to require much more of an investment. And then if I could find somebody cheaper to come along, I could just pay them later less money, which is a corporate thing to do. It's a lot of, you'll see it a lot. Like when you go to apply for places, they're like, oh, this job pays only, you know, $13.50 an hour, which I don't believe is commensurate to your skill set. I'm like, no. You're not hiring somebody, you know, to crunch numbers for NASA. You just need me to push some buttons on a register, and most of these processes are automated. So I don't even have to really think most of the time behind a register. You just want to be able to pay a 16, 17-year-old, you know, $4 an hour less so you can hit just above minimum wage. Whereas if you had to pay me to do the job, you'd have to pay me at least $13.50 to $15 an hour just because of my age and, you know, my assumed needs for living. But, you know, I'd be fine if you would pay me just $10 an hour and just give me the fucking job. Like, it wouldn't be my happiest moment, but I would still have job. I would still make money. And that's the one thing that sucks about being a creative person is you kind of have to find another thing to do until you can do the thing you love. And up until recently, I was able to kind of work on it and get a push that way. But then we hit the pandemic and everything kind of fell to shit. And then the market got flooded and oversaturated with a lot of people who are creating, you know, videos or other kinds of entertainment media online, and then that glut of people hitting the waves made it harder for people who are either dedicated but small, or you know, small but sporadic, to continue to have any kind of market share. And you know, while you have seen a certain fall off to some of the people who are like, this was fun and stuff while I was in the pandemic, but now that we're quote unquote out of it, I'm going to go back to doing this, and that's starting to fall away a little bit. There's still enough of a stigma in the mindset that, like, if you're doing this, and even if they look at it and go, like, oh man, you've been doing this for 7 years now. Like, yeah, they're like, well, you should be bigger than you are. I'm like, you would think a lot of things would be better than they were after being around for 7 years, but they're not. You know what I mean? That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with anything. There could be any number of reasons and circumstances that drive that particular dearth of, you know, followers or subscribers or whatever. And it's just really crazy, man, because everybody's got an opinion on what you should do and how you should do the thing. But I would be very interested to see somebody do that and start it over from scratch and rewind themselves, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years and try to do the exact same thing that I'm trying to do right now, the way that I'm trying to do it. And even with their insights or whatever, like, hey, I think you should do this. I want to see how it goes. Not because I don't think they'll, because I think they'll fail, because they probably could succeed, but I want to see how they do the process, you know? I think that's the thing that really sticks in my craw. Everybody's always got plans and means and hopes and schemes and, you know, ideas for how you should do the thing that you should do. But where are they when you need them? You know what I mean? Like I could have used this advice maybe, like, you know, 10 years ago. But right now where I'm sitting, what I was doing back then is a very different animal than what I'm doing now. I'm also a different person now. So some of this stuff isn't going to be well received. And a lot of times it's not even asked for. People just feel like just because you have a position, no matter what it is, doesn't matter what you do, no matter where you go, somebody will have an opinion on what it is you're doing. And they can't wait to tell you how they would do it if they were you. And it's like, all right, cool. Well, why don't you come over and do that for like the next 5, 6 months, and then we'll see how it works. And it really isn't to be an asshole. It's just like, you know, if you're so incredibly confident that this is going to work, I need you to show me how to do it. Like when I was like, you know, I'm going to make a community challenge for stuff on Twitch, right? I wasn't being a dick about it. I was just like, I want to try to do this thing. And then I got like, oh, this is going to be, it should do like this. It should be like that. It should be like this. I'm like, well, then you manage it then. You come up with the concept, you come up with the idea, and I'll do it the way you want it done. But in the meantime, I'm still trying to figure all this shit out by myself. I don't have a business manager. I don't have a social media manager. You know what I mean? I don't have an assistant even. You know what I mean? I can't afford any of that shit. So it's all got to be me. So unless you're willing to work for free 99, you know what I mean? And then you have to like just take some of these ideas and be like, either I need to keep this to myself, or I need to say like, if you want some advice, like I could help you. You know what I mean? Don't just start firing shit off at me, because all it does is make me feel like, oh, if you're so good at it, why don't you do it? Again, because not everything is for everybody. You know what I mean? But it's tough because you want to get better at the thing that you're doing, especially if you give a shit about it. But not, it doesn't always work out. It's not the worst thing in the world to get like unsolicited advice. I'm usually pretty good about dealing with it because I know a lot of people just want to talk and be heard. And so I know what that feels like. I want to talk and be heard too. That's why I have a podcast. Then part of me kind of goes like, man, if you have such great ideas, you should have your own podcast. You know what I mean? Like you should do that. Or you should be on mine. You know what I mean? We'll hear some more of your idea man stories. Let's do that stuff. That's just where I'm coming from. You know what I mean? And I will gladly give credit where it's due. Like if somebody comes up with a great idea, I have no problem giving them credit. You know what I mean? Like you help me, you know, figure this idea out. Fuck yeah, man. That's awesome. So-and-so helped me figure this out. And thank you very much for that kind of thing. You know, that kind of thing. I noticed it doesn't really work in the inverse. Like you come up with some great shit or some good ideas. A lot of times people just be like, yeah, you know, I help you. You help shape that. You help create that. Like, that's all me. I was like, the fuck? You know, I was in on that shit, right? That's why I think some people don't give advice is because they'll be like, I would tell you this stuff, but maybe you're just going to take my shit and run with it. And maybe that's why the unsolicited advice comes out too, though. You know what I mean? They're like, well, I don't give a shit if you're going to use this or not. I'm just going to say whatever I want to say. Maybe that's what it is. I personally would rather credit somebody with, you know, helping me out with something than just blabber away and then they do something and I'm like, I structured that. And they're like, eh, did you though? Or did you just come out the side of your face with something when I didn't ask you and now I'm doing it? It's a weird thing, you know what I mean? Just trying to be able to give somebody their flowers and stuff like that because, you know, they deserve it because they helped out. But then the other hand, like, but is it something I asked for though? It's weird. It's a weird dynamic. It's a weird place to walk, man. Anyway, we were talking about earlier, because we're kind of getting to that point where, you know, I was going to talk about this stuff that happened in the news this week. First of all, Pam Bondi can kiss both sides of my ass. This whole bullshit about there is no Epstein list. How we heard you go on all the news networks and be like, I have the list. It's on my desk. It's under review. La, 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 la. And then this week you're like, there is no list. Like trying to remember who it was, but it's like trying to do the Jedi mind trick. Like there is no such thing as an Epstein list. Like, yeah, there is. We know. Only because you spent like a year and a half talking about it and whatnot. And now you're going to try to tell everybody the list didn't exist. Bullshit. I want to see what Kash Patel has to say about it because I don't think that Kash Patel, as the director of the FBI, for whatever reason I don't fucking know, has the spine to stand up to Pam Bondi and say, no, there's a list and we should be looking at it and the people who are on it should be prosecuted. Because it means he's going to have to put the commander in Cheeto into prison probably. Well, they're not going to, let's just be real, they're not going to put Trump in jail, no matter what. He would actually have to disembowel somebody on national TV. And even then, they might say it was an AI deepfake or, you know, some kind of like deep state propaganda. Or they'll be like, it's a CIA plot, even though they're running the government right now. It'd be some bullshit. And everybody who's hanging off of his nuts would believe it. And they'd be like, well, you know, they're always trying to get him. Who's they? He's they. They are they. Like all the people who would be they are there in the offices. So if they are doing it, then that means that they mean it. So dumb. So dumb. It's weird the way you see it, like, locally and nationally and whatnot. Like, just the way that people will try to do anything. So, like, I mean, it's so weird to see this kind of... It's not even nationalism at a certain point. It's just, like, blind loyalty. Just to a party ideology, which you can see is destructive, but just can't let it go. Just won't let it go either. Like here in Duval County, we have a sheriff named TK Waters. This guy sucks. I'm going to be honest with you. I've said it before. I'll say it again. TK Waters is one of them, in my personal opinion, one of them self-hating blacks. Like he wants to be white so bad, like he just can't not. And he leans on like MAGA Republicans so hard, like he just wants to be accepted. And it's kind of pathetic to watch a grown-ass man be that weak-willed and that lily-livered. But it happens a lot. It happens a lot. But yeah, it's very disappointing to witness. Let me just be honest with you. And so now there's a thing about like the Duval County Jail, which is very old and out of date. And they're like, the elevators are so old that they don't even make parts for these things anymore. There's mold growing everywhere. And I'm like, well, that's because y'all nasty. And it's Florida. So everything's going to have something if you don't take care of it properly. And they're like, and we want something that's not as tall. We want something. There's so much landmass in the state. You just want to build up and develop more landmass. What kind of real estate deal are you guys trying to push through with the prison? Which private equity firm is throwing money at the prisons now? They've already bought up all the retail housing and rental apartments housing, you know, around the city. So it's untenably high to get an apartment in this place, in this city. So now we gotta, you know, you've bought up all the other like livable property. So now you gotta do retail property / you have to do like a private prison basically. So that's what we're working on. Now the people in the city don't want it and nobody wants a jail in their neighborhood, right? So you're gonna have to find some undeveloped plot of land where you can slap this prison or jail or whatever and throw everybody in there so nobody has to see them or deal with them. Which they're gonna be fighting an uphill battle with that because nobody wants this, but This is the kind of thing that he's pushing for because he thinks like this is what the base, like the Republican base, really wants, and he's so blindly devoted to it that he's willing to fight with city council on it. There's another thing we're talking about national news. So we've all heard about the horrible floods that have been going through Texas and have wiped out entire swaths of the community out there. And I gotta be honest with you, I'm not stoked about loss of life or anything like that. That's not my jam. Like, even when they were like shooting at Trump, they were like, ooh, we just missed him. I'm like, fuck. I really don't want him dead. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of hateful to wish that on somebody. I think that if he were not around, and I'm not saying dead, but if he were just not around, things would be better for humanity in general, the United States in particular. But that don't have nothing to do with nothing except the fact that I think he's a dog shit human being. It's not because I want him dead. Like, if he were just to go away somewhere, I mean, if he just send his ass to Antarctica where he can't hurt nobody, that would be my favorite thing in the world. He'd just be gone. We'd all know where he was. We'd keep an eye on him so he doesn't get loose. But he can't affect nobody anymore. No cell phone. He's just living down there in the ice caps with the penguins. Cool. Done. And I'm not stoked about, the loss of life that's happened behind this latest batch of floods in Texas either. We had an interesting discussion about it because in the Discord, like I said, I keep that separate from the podcast stuff because I don't want y'all in there. Not that I don't trust you and I don't love you, but like if this gets really big, I don't want anybody just bombarding that Discord because that's a personal thing. But there's an interesting video that popped up where a guy was like, yep, you're having the day you voted for with the floods. And then another version of himself slaps him and says, you know, that the idea of partisan politics is taking away his basic humanity and we shouldn't be happy about people dying in floods and natural disasters because of X, Y, or Z reasons. And I was like, that's an interesting point and I do agree. But to a broader and larger extent, my personal take on the situation is not that they deserve, quote unquote, deserve to die or anything like that, because that's not the message I'm trying to send. But over a long enough timeline, you have an opportunity and also a responsibility to your community. If you're starting to see that like the political slant that y'all have been on is dragging you downhill, it's incumbent upon you to change it. Do something. Find somebody, even if you're not going to vote blue at all. Because usually that's what this is, right? Especially in a lot of like, you know, underserved communities or rural communities or even like just in like more right-leaning states, whether they're rural or not, they're starting to see the effects of the Republican Party, the MAGA cult, and the cult of Donald J. Trump, and the effects that it's having on their communities, on their families, on their businesses, on the world, on the country at large, and the world as a whole. And for some reason, they just can't let it go. They still have to hold on to that, you know, you still have to hold on to that lead weight that's dragging them underwater. Maybe that's not the greatest analogy when we're talking about floods, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like, when you see something that's actively harming you and you keep holding on to it, at a certain point, it becomes you. It's not just the thing that's affecting you that's the problem. Like, the weight that's affecting you is definitely a problem, but you could also let go of it. And that was one of my contentions. And we had a great conversation for a little bit about it. And it's like, you know, I don't wish any harm on anybody. I'm not stoked that, you know, these campers especially, these young kids died and whatnot. But I said it before, and unfortunately, it seems like it might end up being a true thing now. When a machine has to eat like this, once it's done eating all of like the lesser than, in quotes, or the quote others, end quote, then it has to keep eating. And what ends up happening is a lot of times when these kinds of systemic changes need to be made, it's unfortunate, but it does have to eat some white kids. Every now and again, it's got to eat like a, it's got to eat a couple white kids, got to eat a couple pretty white girls before, you know, these, especially these hardliners on the right, give a damn. And even on the left too, no matter where you are, until it starts to affect people that look like you or it starts to affect you personally, a lot of people just don't give a shit. It's unfortunate and it's ugly, but unfortunately, it's a true statement about where this country is and society as a whole. I think in all of humanity it happens, but in America, it's very pointed where they don't seem to care. And by they, I mean largely conservatives / the MAGA Republicans. They don't seem to give a shit about something until it starts eating their own kids. Then all of a sudden it's a problem. And that's kind of what's happening right now. And the unfortunate thing about this is, as regards these floods and whatnot, this is a failure of civic leadership, which means that these are the people that the city and, you know, the governor or like the mayor or whatever have either elected and or appointed to be in these positions. And there's a group that's there that basically is trying to push for better management for, you know, resources and funding and preventative measures about flooding in this particular river basin. And every year for almost a decade, they've been trying to push this idea of a early alert warning system for flooding, because this happens a lot in this area. Like, this particular valley just floods when it rains too much. It basically runs right down to the Gulf of Mexico. And when the water levels rise, it got nowhere to go but into this gully. And then everything rises. There's some really horrifying footage of how the floodwaters rose 22 feet in less than 35, 45 minutes. It's insane. Now, you watch the footage, it's sped up, obviously. You can see it. But there's a timestamp on there. You're watching it count down by minutes as the floodwaters rise to the level of a two-story house. Go and look outside at the roof of your house. Let's say you live in a one-level house. If you're fortunate enough to live in a two-level house, go and look at the second floor, just the eaves of the second floor. And imagine how fast you'd have to swim to get from the ground where you're standing all the way to the top as the water is rushing, you know, at in excess of probably like 15, 20 miles an hour. It's got to be faster than that. I'm sure it is. The floodwaters were moving quick. So let's just say waters are moving, I don't know how many knots per hour it is for miles per hour. I wonder if I can do that let's see if I can find that conversion real quick. I give up. Anyway, the calculations are just a lot more than I want to bother doing right now during the podcast. If I was going to do this, I should have done it earlier. But if anybody wants to do it and send it in to me, I can double check the math and see how it works. But anyway, water's moving fast as fuck. So imagine, let's just say it was flowing at like 20 miles per hour. Just throw that out there. Flowing at 20 miles per hour. How hard would you have to swim to get from the bottom of that basin all the way to the top of your, you know, second story house? And would you be able to keep up that rate of speed? I mean, because remember, you're getting thrown up against trees, houses, cars, whatever floating debris is in the water, right? So we take that kind of terror into account, right? And then take into account the fact that in Kerr County in Texas, this particular group had been trying to push this warning system for almost 10 years, and it kept getting voted down to the point where the closest they could get in the last talks that they showed earlier this year was about hiring local police and whatnot and other agencies to work on policing people away from flooded areas, right? Because, you know, there's always going to be those crazy people who are going to be like, let's get in a kayak and go in the floodwater. No. So they couldn't get any money for an early alert system, but instead they got money to have more police when the rain happens. Like, are you going to stack them in front of the water like logs in front of a dam? Like, what's the point of having more people to be there to get dead? And one of the things I was bringing up during that whole conversation was, you know, while I'm not excited about the idea of people dying because they voted for Trump, although I am kind of on the mindset that, like, you get what you ask for, right? So if you kept fucking around and being like, this is our guy, well, when this kind of stuff happens, you know what I mean? And especially not even just Trump. I mean, when you're voting along partisan lines and using that as a basis for what should be good public policy for everybody involved, this is about public safety. This is not about whether or not, you know, you think that, you know, LGBTQ people should serve in the military, or if, you know, certain books that were written by Judy Blume should be in your library, or should certain people be declared quote unquote illegal because they're not here through a naturalization process. This has nothing to do with that. This is like big water kill people, how we make big water stop. Can't make big water stop. Make big sign, make big noise to let people know big water coming. Good. Make big sign, make big noise to make people know big water coming. They couldn't get that through their fucking skulls. You know what I mean? Like, higher level concepts are going to be lost on them. So in a certain stripe, like if you paint in a certain stripe, I'm like, at the same time, I want people to be healthy and happy and safe. If you continually vote against your own self-interest, this is kind of your fault. Like, it's not the rain happening is your fault, but the fact that there's no early alert system or anybody in place who could approve the idea of an early alert, you voted so hard against long partisan lines and against the idea of common sense and safety and security that now that you don't have the last two things, you're like, well, what's happened here is a tragedy. Is it? Because part of me feels like this is tragedy only in the way that it's tragic that you didn't do something sooner to avoid it. That's the bigger tragedy. It's not that it happened. It's not that people died. The bigger tragedy is you had the opportunity to forego this, to get ahead of it, to maybe curtail some of the damage and loss of life, but you've actively chosen not to. That might be the bigger tragedy here. I'm not saying that the loss of life doesn't matter. What I'm saying is that the loss of life could have been mitigated. So the most tragic thing about it is that you had the opportunity to do something and did nothing. You Lisa Murkowski'd this, basically, right? Remember last week we talked about Lisa Murkowski and how she kind of pushed the one big beautiful bill down the line, thinking, oh, well, when it gets up there to the House, then they'll kick it back to the Senate and then we can work on it. Bitch, you had the opportunity then to do something to stop things from happening then. And you chose not to act upon it. And so now we're all stuck with this. Oh, you might get out of some of this because you made a backdoor deal with Donald Trump for whatever kind of political points and whatnot that you wanted so you could get Alaskans out of it. But thanks, Alaska, you're one of 50 fucking states. Now all the rest of us have to deal with this. Same thing in Florida. Thanks, Florida. Appreciate you fucking over people in New Hampshire and Connecticut and other places that were like, hey man, this isn't a good idea. And when you take into account the fact that a lot of, again, we're looking at the floods in Texas, they're going to be asking for FEMA assistance. And FEMA's been getting kneecapped a lot lately in terms of their personnel and their resources and their financing, their funding. When they come with their hands out, remember, Texas voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump and voted overwhelmingly Republican over the last 10 years. So while there have been some Democratic wins in the state, maybe even some independent wins, although they're very minor, they voted largely red. And so when they come with their hands out, guess who's funding? Guess who's funding that relief effort? It's largely funded by blue states, funded by places like California, like Illinois, Massachusetts. You know, these states, and that's just a handful of them, but the blue states, generally speaking, tend to fund a lot of the disaster stuff that happens in red states. States like North Carolina, states like Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Louisiana. When these states go red and then they're too broke to be able to afford to cover their own damage bills, they reach out to the federal government, which means that they're also, to remember this, reaching into their neighbors' pockets to get their tax money that they paid to the federal government. So much so to the point that there are certain democratically run states that are now going, well, you want to keep doing these policies that hurt our people? We're not fucking paying you. We're not going to give any federal income tax to the government. We're just not going to do it because we're not seeing the benefits coming back to us. It keeps getting sent off to these other states, but we need it here for schools. But you're mad at us because we're California and we're gay. That's your perception of us. So you won't give us money for schools. You won't give us money for any kind of, you know, flood, like when we have drought relief that we need to take care of. You won't do that. You want to take credit for moving the water like this motherfucker thinks he's Moses or some shit. And you want to take all that credit and then, you know, shit on us, but then take our money and give it to the other red states that voted for you. No, we're not doing it no more. And they're trying to set a legal precedent in order to stop the flow of state money to the federal government. And it looks like even if it doesn't work, it's going to give people some ideas on how to make it so that it can. And that's going to hurt a lot of red states. So this is what I'm saying. We go back to the idea of, you know, at a certain point, you got to take some accountability for the fact that you did nothing. Or that you did all the wrong things. And then when bad befalls you, you have to go, well, why did this happen? Woe is me. No. Oh, it's you. Like, you're the problem. It's you. No one likes to hear that shit. But I mean, at a certain point, another thing I was saying last night is that, and people don't like him necessarily, but that's because I think he just let himself get kind of swept up in things. He's got swept up in the heat of the moment and in the cultural zeitgeist that he was just like so excited for that. And he forgot to be who he was originally. But Joe Rogan had this interesting bit where he talked about how sometimes we'll let people get away with saying silly shit just because we want to appear to be politically correct instead of calling them out for being a silly bitch. And it's like when people do stuff like that, you know, they do stuff that's harmful or dangerous or just flat out stupid. If you don't call them out on it, you're doing not only them, but yourself and everybody around you and them a disservice. And I think that that's part of the reason why, you know, people are railing against, you know, MAGA Republicans, you know, in particular, but the Republican Party as a whole, is because when they have the opportunity to do something, like Elise or Murkowski, they don't take the opportunity because they're looking to play political points up so that they can keep their jobs, as opposed to serving the people in the constituencies that are not only in their own state, but around them. You, by doing something bad for your state, you know what I mean? Or voting along a line that hurts people in your state, or maybe you think hurts other people around you, you end up affecting your neighbors. That's not just the people that live on the same block or in the same city or in the same state. It affects all the other states around you. Remember, some of those states are the ones who are paying into the coffers that help you out when you need help. It's a hard lesson to learn, but they're gonna start learning it real fucking fast. These floods are just one example of how, unfortunately, when people don't look out for one another, fuck your own self-interest. You should be looking out for your own self-interests, right? Like the people of Kerr County and we'll say not even just the people themselves, although I'm certain that they've had some votes or, you know, they've had some kind of, you know, political maneuvering that helped get some of these state and local congressmen and representatives and then, you know, commissioners and city council people up into this position where they've log jammed this early alert system. At a certain point, it's your fault. You keep letting them get in there. You keep letting them have these seats. This is your fault. There's no one left to blame. And if you keep fucking around, there really won't be. But again, that's, you know, I can't make the decisions for people. Neither can you. All you can do is try to encourage them to do the right thing, continue to do what you feel is the right thing for you, and then, you know, it also in the interests of other human beings. I think that's where a lot of us land, is we're not necessarily all trying to push like either a religious or political agenda, but the large majority of us who are decent people, and that's not saying the majority of Americans, but we'll just say like the majority of decent people aren't trying to foist their beliefs upon you. They're trying to get you to do something that's going to work in the common interest of everybody. So we all move together and like arrive at the end goal, mostly safe, happy, and healthy. It's bizarre to see people who just don't seem to give a shit about that, but that does end up being the case. Yeah, it made me think about the 4th of July, you know what I mean, which has just passed, you know, in the interim since like the last podcast anyway. Like I said, the 4th of July is come and gone. And one of the things I noticed, fireworks pretty light this year. They're pretty light. Is it that money's really that tight and fireworks that expensive? Or people really just not feeling America's birthday like they used to? I think some of the sting of the last couple of months especially got people feeling a little different about America. That's just my opinion, but I noticed them fireworks popped off every now and again and then they stopped real quick. Haven't been a whole lot of extra shooting off of fireworks this year like there were in years prior. And I live in a very red area of the very red state. So, sorry for your luck, guys. I voted for the nice black lady. Anyway, what do you guys think? Feel free to hit me up over on Patreon, patreon.com/WanderingOneStudios. Questions, comments, more, hit me up there. Let me know what you think. You can also check me out over on Blue Sky at w1studios.bsky.social. I think it's socials, plural. And then check me out over on Twitch, twitch.tv/linkib. And, let's check this out. I'd love for you guys to hit me up on Patreon. I can't wait to read some more comments. Again, one of the talking points today came from my Discord, but that's also a person, that would probably write in on a regular basis. And so if you have comments, questions, or more, like I said, hit me up on Patreon so we can talk about it. I'm going to get out of here because it's about time to get to streaming and doing the dream. And then it's going to be time to go watch 28 Years Later, which I may or may not give a spoiler review of later on the next podcast or sometime over the weekend. I'm Link Flores. You guys are dope. Please continue to like, share, subscribe, and comment, rate, review, all that good stuff. Take like a minute or two out of your day. Help the boy out. Let's get this thing moving around and seeing some more faces come up in here. I love you guys, and I will catch up with you wanderers a little further down the road. Peace.